I'm very fierce about intuition because it's been used always to fluff up, to denigrate, to feminize work that's considered missing in structure and principle and rigor. Mm-hmm. But that's incorrect because intuition is the sum of all anybody's experience. That's what's going to guide you, save you, inform you, have you recognize what's most challenging or structural in terms of process and principle. Mm-hmm. So intuition is one ingredient. You know, it's the butter or the salt or some basic underlying essential part of sensibility. It's just that it doesn't belong to Western dialogic mm-hmm. considerations. It's fluffy. Mm-hmm. It has to be reintegrated, of course, as mm-hmm. one of those. Mm-hmm. As for, what's the word?
Practice.
That I hate so much. Practice. Where does it practice. Come from, entering art?
I guess it's just an attempt to think of what one's doing as a process without end, but that process is itself a practice of perpetual negotiation. It's a redefinition of practice, maybe.
It's overriding. It's kind of hyper-inclusivity, and I think I just have to lie down and take it. But I'm going to hate it forever. It does not belong to perception mm-hmm. or sense or mm-hmm. sensoriness. It certainly doesn't come out of painting. That's where all my principles had mm-hmm. their force field. Practice belongs to something more mechanistic, more materialistic, more predictable, more measurable, and it definitely belongs to a whole other verbal tradition, you know, a different realm of reference.
When I think of the Vietnam years, when I read some of the letters that I've written from that period, I think of you as an activist. You seem, in yeah. every sense, you seem like an activist, and I still think of you that way. Do you see yourself in the way that I project onto you? I see you as an artist. I see you as an artist activist.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I just don't see the potential for transforming an institution that might be part of your immediate legacy, uh-huh. where you can be engaged with an institution. Uh-huh. I don't think I was ever even enabled to get very close to what we would call an institutional body.
Uh-huh. The stakes are different and the opportunities have been different. The times are different. Although it's because of what you did that I'm in the position that I'm in.
But I'm so thrilled because you can see what I've done as a benefit to what you need to do. Yeah. It's very, very good. Yeah.
So what was it like? I remember in one letter reading about Julian Beck's files being taken away by the CIA and the Living Theater being shut down. And there's a part of me that understands those events in mm-hmm. relationship to the events that I've been living through with. The events of Occupy and the other uh-huh. events of our times of surveillance, of police repression and... and then there's a part of me which also understands there to have been really a different moment at that time with regard to the role of the artist in society. And the resistance was even more severe and more strong in that time. In a way.
No, it wasn't. Uh-huh. No, it's more occluded now, uh-huh. but it's the same old, same old. It was more primitive. In Paris in 64, when there must have been some little... small part of a government agency checking up on the Festival of Free Expression, mm-hmm. whatever that would be. We were sitting in a cafe in Paris outdoors, and there was a man at a table next to us having coffee and smoking cigarettes, and then we saw the tape recorder under his chair, just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, what could he be recording? Except what we're talking about, there's no one else around. Can't be the pigeons cooing. Yeah. And the phones were always clicking. And your mail wasn't always closed properly. Mm. It didn't have the electronic subtleties to the extent that we have them today.
You mean it's like invisible? We almost
don't. Invisible here. Yeah, it is. It's all, it's all electronic. The way that can replace image making, music composition, you turn it all over to a constructed system. So it's already robotic, and then it has the same terrible potential consequence of being used against independent thought and idealistic group plans and activities and anything that might seem vaguely threatening. But I think there's a more precise attempt at registration of what threatens the existing controls. You know, I went down to Occupy, and it was very difficult. I felt all the residual trauma of being tear gassed and stampeded and having my friends arrested and having their arms broken and being thrown into different kinds of jails, and reliving when we were going to occupy the Pentagon, and we did, and we went in buses, as you probably know, there might be some letter about it, down to Washington. I had a blind animal saying, no, we're on top of this fixed building, like sitting ducks. Everybody's here. This is like a big, flat, open plane, and here's these helicopters above and these gas people below. And I wanted to be there and to be part of it, and I turned around against my will and started squeezing my way back down. And on the way down, I was passing Ed Sanders and Ginsburg and all my left-wing friends.
And you're going the opposite way.
I'm going the opposite way. I was already up there, and I just wanted to be invisible and disappear. And, of course, once I got down, then I was just entering the realm of the layer of the tear gas on everybody. And I couldn't find Jim. We had been separated. But I remembered that feeling quizzical. You've been struggling to get to the top of the Pentagon, and now you're going away.
But you weren't going away. You were just trying to seek out a different space or zone. It wasn't that you were leaving or evading. You were just not necessarily wanting to be at that front line.
That was a vulnerability of that. I thought, I'll be more used to anything and everything if I don't feel this absolute vulnerability. So, you know, it resembles the whole cancer proportion that came later. I see it now, similar. Bolting.
But the bolting is also is an attempt to negotiate it. I guess I'm interested in the question of community and how we construct for ourselves a community of friends, of colleagues, of support.
Okay.
Sometimes in the absence of more formal forms of support, we invent our own forms of support.
Oh, yes.
And so I guess I'm interested in the way that all these years you've been at the center and within a circle of extraordinary conversations. And those conversations seem to be more than just conversations. They seem to, from where I sit or what I do, I think of them almost as like an infrastructure.
You might say kinship, and I would say affiliation, because kin, I'd like to have a dictionary. I think kin means some kind of biological affinity. Kin, and it probably comes from the same root that shares all these K's, including knowledge, and cunt, and basket. There's that reason, a container.
And well, I understand that history, but then for me, that history means that I want to redefine that concept, that word. I want to practice it and perform it in a different way, and precisely because kinship can be the reason for or the means by which you exclude. I want to think of it differently. I want to make it not be just exclusion, I guess.
Well, if I am in a group, I want to establish an equality, the assumption of equality among all of us, and particularly as a teacher, I can do this, and it's very satisfying, and I think it's one of the gifts that you bring to your groups as well. And I think some of it is clear for me from being at Quaker schools and doing Quaker practice and meditation, where that open circle introduces patience, waiting, and no assumption of hierarchy, mm-hmm. so that everyone has their equal moment, mm-hmm. if they mm-hmm. choose it. Mm-hmm. And then as a teacher, I see my function as to provide an equal moment for everyone, even if they're not aware that they can have it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I'm doing a work, uh-huh. my situation is not, in essence, what they like to call democratic. I'm in charge. I'm in charge of fulfilling the vision, the dynamic, and the motive of it. And I hope to give participants a full and equal area. But overall, mm-hmm. I'm shaping it, and I maintain that, and the same with teaching. Mm-hmm. I have the potentiality of the subject in front of me, and I have a very exciting and also devious position of making them find what they need without their knowing it. Mm-hmm. So that's really so gratifying to do.
It's not strategic, though. It's not that you're strategically trying to do this.
Oh, I couldn't, because it's not predictable. You're given the overall subject and its dynamic, and then it depends so much on the awareness of the group that can develop, right? Mm-hmm. As for the institution itself, it doesn't usually know what you're doing or like it, mm-hmm. especially insofar as it gets exciting, revelatory, and even magical for mm-hmm. the participants. Most academic situations are very resentful of something they can't control and predict, and they want unconsciously an exactitude that's mediocre, mm-hmm. because that's where nothing's very rigorous. Mm-hmm. But it takes a long time to figure out what's going on, because my feeling has always been, we're going to do something wonderful and everyone's going to be excited about this. Mm-hmm. Not that they're going to find it mm-hmm. too much or something wrong and get rid of me again. But now I'm used to that.
Maybe this question is very vague and abstract, but can an institution change? And how do you think about institutions at this point in time? Maybe the museum being the institution that we're invoking here more specifically.
I try not to think about them. What a can of worms. They've been so neglectful of what I've done overall. And the institutions that have been enlightened or beneficent have just snuck through their own structures to allow my presence, my influence, my teaching, my work. It's just a metaphor for the structure of the government and the organizations all around us. They're self-righteous, they're belligerent. They're concerned with domination, kinds of importance that are contrary to what our motives are. Mm-hmm. So it's very rare and fortunate mm-hmm. when the kinds of work we do can penetrate mm-hmm. the existing expectations mm-hmm. of our institutions.
The other day when you corrected me when I had said, do you see your work as an instrument almost to negotiate these power relations, you had corrected me and said, no, that's not what the purpose of the work is.
But I don't mind that you would take that sense of it into your own thoughts. Uh-huh. It's just that I can't do that.
Right. It's not that I shouldn't project onto you that that's what you're trying to do, although it's okay if that's how I understand the implications
exactly.
or the consequences of the work.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think about the audience or my culture very explicitly. Uh-huh. If I do that, I'm ruined. Uh-huh. I'm defeated before I start. I just concentrate on the intensity of possibility of something I might make. And I don't know if it's going to, how it's going to, and usually I do it without any support whatsoever, as you know. So that keeps me in my somewhat marginalized position. So either I'm a really important artist who's on the margins, or I'm a marginal artist who's trying to be more central. I don't know where it really goes. Mm-hmm. I have such a tremendous, gratifying response from researchers from many different generational positions. But institutions have been, for the most part, stupid, resistant, and obsessed with some aspect of my work that happened 25 years ago. And frightened. They're all frightened.
And maybe the difference between yourself and myself would be that, for me, in a way, I feel like if I have a fight, my fight is to contribute in some small way to a shift in institutional culture.
Yes.
And maybe you would say that may be one of the consequences of your work, but it's not what your work is. It's not what your work is trying to.
Well, I can't deal with it. Yeah, I'm crippled in that way, and I don't have the kind of aggressive courage that some more successful artists have managed to have. So I'm happy to give it to you. Here,
yeah, I understand.
Take this mess, and wherever you can sort it out, I'm thrilled. Just coming into a stronger formulation of an institution is terrific. Mm-hmm. And it does mean that the institution has changed or shifted. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yesterday we were talking about, I think we were talking about authorship. Or at least I heard you saying as we were walking on the sidewalk that I should document all that we're doing. That we should create an archive.
Well, particularly I think you're a centrifuge in all this, but you release so much energy and potentiality and so much thoughtfulness. And I'm thinking, I suppose, of the most amazing teacher I ever had, Heinrich Blücher. Do you know who he is? Mm-hmm. Husband of Hannah Arendt is how people know of him. But he never wrote. He only taught. He spoke. He thought. He gave you... He was like one of my subsequent cats. He could put thoughts in your mind that you never imagined you could contain. But he never wrote anything down, so it became inexplicable when people would say, well, what are you studying? What are you doing? And you'd say, well, it had to do with Lao Tzu today, but then it went right into Nietzsche.
And why is that a problem? It's lived. It's a lived form of writing.
It's fabulous, but why can't we have the traces also?
What would he have said if you had asked him to do that?
I think he would have said he didn't have time to combine the methodologies.
When I look at who you are, what you've done, I think of you of having performed what previous artists and generations had not, which was that you joined your art and your life, and they seem to be intertwined and fused in such a way that although there have been works that you have left behind and you have made, wouldn't you say that your life has also not been recorded in every sense? But your life is also your art?
Well, it all flies away, for sure. And my most important painting constructions, the most important to me, have all been destroyed. Mm-hmm. You know, they're given to friends whom I trusted, and they let them be destroyed. But look how intentionally I've retrieved everything I could since I was a child. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't even want to think about that, but it has to do with cherishing as much as I could and being fascinated by it and watching it. Well, it's kind of Proustian after the fact. How can you shape all the evanescent transmigrations of experience? And of course you can't, and that's its process.